We'll continue our discussion on the 9th chapter of 2nd Canto. So, we have just this morning we completed discussing the Chatushloki Srimad Bhagavatam. So, before we continue further, if there are any comments, questions, we can take before we move to the next topic. Can you pass?
Hare Krishna.
Yes, please.
So these are the four verses Lord spoke to Brahmaji.
Yeah.
And is there some explanation or some understanding about how Brahmaji has got all those others, no? As the expansion of Bhagavatam came 18,000 verses.
Is there an explanation of what Prabhuji?
How the four verses have expanded into...
How exactly the 18,000 verses are an expansion of the four verses? Maybe Srila Jiva Goswami has touched this subject matter in his Sandarbhas. But as far as my reading goes, I have not come across. But I am sure Jiva Goswami would have discussed it somewhere in his Sandarbhas. But exactly I do not know. Anything else? Okay. So, we'll continue our discussion. So, the last thing that we saw was the Lord's instruction to Brahmaji as to how he needs to apply these principles. Etan matam samatishta paramena samadhina bhavan kalpa vikalpeshu navimuhyati karhichit. He says, if you apply these teachings in all its details with extreme concentration, then you will never be bewildered at any time. So we are discussing that this is in one sense like a common sense instruction. This goes without saying for any instruction for that matter. When it is followed in all details with extreme concentration, it will give the maximum benefit. So it's not just for the Chatushloki Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a general instruction as to how to get the maximum benefit of any instruction is to follow in it in all its details with extreme concentration. Shri Shuka Uvacha Sampradeshyevam Aj... Shri Shuka Uvacha Sampradeshyevam Ajano Jananam Parameshtinam Pashyatastasya Tadrupam Atmano Nyarunad Harihi. Lord Hari, Ajana, who is beyond this material world, Evam Sampradeshya, having thus instructed Jananam Parameshtinam, having thus instructed Brahmaji, who is the creator of all progeny, Tad Atmano Rupam Nyarunad. Then he made his form disappear. Pashyatah, while Brahmaji was watching. So as soon as he spoke this verse, he disappeared from that place, from Brahmaji's vision. Antarhitendriyartaya haraye vihitanjalihi sarvabhotamayo vishvam sasarjedam sapurvavat. This is interesting. Brahmaji folded his hands, Vihitanjalihi, to the Supreme Lord Hari, Indriya Arthaya, whose qualities are the objects of the devotee's senses. Savai Manak Krishna Padaravindayor Vachamsi Vaikunta Gunana Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjanadishu. So the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes, temple, dham, everything are the objects of the devotee's senses. Therefore, he is addressed as Indriya Arthaya, the object of senses. After the Supreme Lord had disappeared, Brahmaji, Idam Vishwam Sajaya Purvavat, he then created this universe as he had done in the previous Kalpa. But we just saw that this was the first day of Brahmaji's creation. Okay? There is no explanation. So my understanding is, as this was the first time Brahmaji was creating, but this was not the first time universe was created. The previous Brahma would have created before this. So that's my understanding of Purvavat. Okay? Because at the beginning of this, it is mentioned that this conversation happened during the first Kalpa, the first day of Brahmaji. At the beginning of the first Kalpa, actually. So, it says first Kalpa, it doesn't say beginning of the first Kalpa. So, first Kalpa means first day of Brahmaji. So, in one day, Brahmaji creates actually many times. Anyway, so Purvavat could mean, because this translation clearly says, as he had done in the previous Kalpa, but as he could refer to Brahma as the post, and it may not be Brahma as the person, that's my understanding, because it is mentioned that this is the first Kalpa of Brahmaji. So if he refers to Brahma the post, then there had been many, many times when the universe was created before. And in my understanding, he cannot refer to Brahma the person, because this was this particular Brahma's first day in the office. That's my understanding. Srila Prabhupada writes here, the Lord is the object of all the senses of the jivas, but because of Maya, they worship the senses. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is to help people engage their senses in Krishna's service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. Brahma is using all his senses to recreate. But the impersonalists try to uproot the senses altogether to escape from the disease of sense gratification. For us, the means of liberation is engagement of our senses. But for the jnanis and yogis, the means of their liberation is to stop engagement of the senses. But the right solution is to engage them in Krishna consciousness. If you have a problem with your eyes, then you fix that problem, but not plug the eyes out. This is what Prabhupada is telling. The solution for material entanglement is engagement of the senses in material sense gratification. So the solution that the jnanis and the yogis propose is kill the senses. But the solution proposed by the devotees is engage them in Krishna's service. Engagement is more easy than stopping sensory engagement. Prajapatir dharmapatir ekada niyaman yaman badram prajanam anvichan atishtat swartha kamyaya. After this conversation took place, once upon a time, ekada, prajapatir dharmapatir, Brahma, the Lord of Dharma, prajanam badram anvichan, desiring the benefit of the progeny, niyaman yaman atishtat, he performed all the rules and regulations that were meant for him, swartha kamyaya, to fulfill his desires. So one day, it was a regular day in the office of Brahmaji, he performed whatever was needed to be performed for the benefit of all the living entities. Then, what happened? Tam naradaha priyatamo rikta danam anuvratah శుశ్రూషమానశీలేన ప్రశ్రయేణ మాయాం విద్విషం విష్ణోర్ మాయేషస్య మహాముని మహాభాగవతో రాజన్ పితరం పర్యతోషయత్. నారద, అట్ ద పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ టైం నారదముని కేందర్. సో హియర్ దిస్ పార్ట్ ఇస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్, దిస్ లాస్ట్ పార్ట్ పుట్స్ దిస్ కాన్వర్సేషన్ దట్ ద లార్డ్ హ్యాడ్ విత్ బ్రహ్మాజీ అండ్ ద కాన్వర్సేషన్ దట్ బ్రహ్మాజీ హ్యాడ్ విత్ నారదముని ఇన్ అ క్రొనలాజికల్ పర్స్పెక్టివ్. That was mentioned first, the conversation between Brahma and Lord Narayan was mentioned second. So it might suggest a reverse chronology. So to clarify this point, Shukadeva Goswami is putting this, both these conversations in the proper chronological perspective. So after this conversation happened between Brahmaji and Lord Narayan, once upon a time when Brahmaji was performing his duties, on one particular day Narada Muni came. So who is this Narada Muni? Tam ritta danam priyatamam. Ritta means wealth. Ritta danam means heir to wealth. Who is the heir to someone's health, wealth? His son. So ritta danam means son. But he was the priyatamam rittadanam. He was the dearmost son. So Prabhupada in his purport writes that Daksha inherited Karmakanda. The four Kumaras inherited Jnanakanda. And Narada Muni inherited Bhakti from Brahmaji. So as a son, each one inherited different things. Narada Muni inherited Bhakti. Anuvratah. This Narada Muni was very much devoted to his father and Shushrushamanah. Why was he the favorite son of Brahmaji? Because he was very devoted to his father and he was very obedient. O king, Mahabhagavatah, this great devotee, Mahamuni, this great sage, Vishnoho Mayam Vidvishan, with a desire to understand about the Maya potency of the Lord, Pitaram Pariyatoshayat, he satisfied his father. How did he satisfy? Shilena Prashrayena Dhaninacha. He satisfied his father with proper conduct, respect and sense control. So this is the means. So when someone, so he came with a desire to know something, but you go to the guru, please him, serve him, and when you are sure that he has understood, he has become pleased by your service, then you start asking questions. Otherwise, the guru is not the, is not our FAQ machine. Key in the FAQs and you will get the answers. Not like that. So there is a procedure. Pranipata, Pariprashna and Sevaya. So Pariprashna and Sevaya should also, sorry, Pranipata and Sevaya should also be accompanied with Pariprashna. Like that. So Narada Muni was very dear to Brahmaji because he was very devoted to him. He was very obedient. And he tried to please him with his proper conduct, respect and sense control. So, Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport. Daksha inherited Karmakanda, the Kumaras inherited Jnanakanda, Narada Muni inherited Bhakti. Because of these qualities of Narada Muni, that is Anuvrataha, Shushrushamanaha, Shilena, Prashrayena and Damena. And on top of that, his unlimited compassion to convert very unqualified people into devotees. Therefore, he is the dearmost son of Brahmaji. So, all these five qualities mentioned in this verse. And apart from that, his unlimited compassion to convert very unqualified people into devotees. Because of these qualities, Narada Muni was the dearmost son of Brahmaji. An advanced devotee is always anxious to speak about Krishna and turn everyone into a devotee. Machitta madgada pranam bodhayanta parasparam. Prabhupada quotes this verse. Although the Lord is unlimited, it is the duty of everyone to inquire about Him from a bona fide spiritual master. So our mode is not, can the Lord be fully understood? No. So what is the point in questioning about the Supreme Lord? Why is there a need to know about the Supreme Lord? That's not the right attitude. Even though He is unlimited, but to whatever extent we should know to serve Him in the right mode, so we should have the inquisitiveness and desire to know. But that inquisitiveness itself is not sufficient. It should also be accompanied by Sevaya and Panipat, like that. Tushtam Nishamya Pitaram Lokanam Prapitamaham Devarishi Paripapracha Bhavan Yanmanu Pruchati. Nishamya Pitaram Tushtam. After understanding that his father had become satisfied with his service and his mood, Devarishi Paripapracha, Narada Muni asked Brahmaji, Yad Bhavan Mam Anupruchati. So Shukadeva Goswami is very man of few words. Not exactly. But here is telling, he wants to convey two messages. Narada Muni's glories, that how Narada Muni first ensured that Brahmaji was satisfied and then only asked questions. But at the same time, he wants to convey that Parikshit Maharaj also falls in that category only. You have also sufficiently pleased me before asking these questions. Don't think that I am giving this example of Narada Muni to teach you. You also fall very much in the category of Narada Muni only. That's what he is telling. Bhavan yad mam anupruchati. The same way you are questioning me, the same way Narada Muni also questioned Brahmaji. Like that. Or it also means the same subject matter that you asked me about creation and primary creation and secondary creation, the same questions Narada Muni asked Brahmaji, like that. Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, the spiritual masters are not paid teachers. The process of acquiring spiritual knowledge is tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Prabhupada quotes the same verse. Spiritual knowledge can come only by pleasing one spiritual master. Yasadeve para bhakti etadeve tata gurau. One cannot himself become a spiritual master unless he has strict obedience to his own spiritual master. Damena. Prabhupada commenting on the word damena says, one who is not self-controlled, especially in sex life, can neither become a spiritual master nor a disciple. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jihva vegam, udaropasta vegam. Etan veganyo vishaheta dira, sarvam apimam, prithvimsta, shishyat. So Prabhupada is commenting about damena, even though it was mentioned in the previous verse, he is commenting about it here. Tasma idam bhagavatam puranam dashalakshanam proktam bhagavata praha prita putraya bhutakrit. Brahmaji, affectionate to Narada Muni, then spoke to his son, idam bhagavatam puranam, this Bhagavat Purana, dashalakshanam, which has 10 characteristics. This verse is the connection to the next chapter, the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavata Proktam, which was spoken by the Lord in 4 verses. 4 verses but 10 topics. Within the 4 verses, 10 topics are covered. So how far that he expands to show. Narada praha munaye sarasvatyastate nrupa dhyayate brahma paramam vyasayamita tejase vyasayamita tejase. O king, Narada spoke this to the sage Vyasa of unlimited powers, who was meditating on the supreme Brahman on the bank of the Saraswati river. So Narada Muni spoke this to Vyasadeva. So the parampara is explained. The same, Prabhuji? Same thing. Yeah. Of course, even there he says Pradesha Matram. Idam hi Vishwam Bhagavani Vetaro. So in that verse he says Pradesha Matram. I am just telling it to you in principle. You know the details. You meditate. Samadhina anusvara tad vicheshtitam, he says. What is the beginning of that? Anyone remember? So he says that you know all these details. You sit and meditate and the appropriate pastimes will come to you. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrup Shuchishravaha Satyavrato Dhridavrata. Urukramasya Akila Bandha Mokshaye Muktaye Samadhina Anusmara Tadvicheshtitam, he says. So you know all these things. Bhavan Amogadrik Shuchishravaha Satyarato Satyavrato Dhridavrataha Urukramasya Akila Bandha Muktaye Samadhina Anusmara Tadvicheshtitam. So, and he says that you will get the right pastimes and you write about them. But the essence is what? The essence is write about those pastimes which glorify devotees, devotional service and Bhagavan. There must be a book that exclusively glorifies only these three aspects. You know the pastimes, you know which pastimes to add. But just because people should not think that a spiritual master is dispensable, one can write anything without a spiritual master also, one should not think like that. Therefore, I am giving you some token instruction. You expand upon it. So of course, he expanded upon what he heard from Brahmaji. And Vyasadeva further expands it into this 18,000 verse form. But of course, even though there is a pastime of Vyasadeva compiling it, Shukadeva Goswami speaking it, Sutra Goswami hearing it, and eventually narrating it to Shaunakadi Rishis. But still, Bhagavatam in its 18,000 verse form is eternal. Just like 5,000 years back, Krishna appeared, as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. But that does not mean that Krishna was not there before. He was there. Krishna is eternal. Similarly, there are pastimes of many things, like Krishna at some point getting his conch shell after killing the demon Panchajana. He is getting his chakra from someone, like that. Chakra from Dadichi's bones, like that. So there are various such pastimes, but that does not, but simultaneously they are also eternal associates of the Supreme Lord, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, etc. So therefore, in the Bhauma Leela, there are some such pastimes, but that does not mean that they are not eternal associates. So therefore, even though there may be some pastimes about how Bhagavatam manifested, but in its 18,000 verse form also, it's eternal. That's how we should understand. That's how it is explained. Otherwise, how can Bhagavatam be the form of Krishna if it is not eternal? Krishna swadhamopagate dharmajnanadibhissah kalau nashtadrishamesha puranarko adhunavuditah. And Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. So Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. How can it be temporary? So such pastimes should be understood in the same way in which Krishna also appears as the son of Mother Devaki and Vasudev. Krishna's paraphernalia he gets at some point, even though they are his eternal associates, like that. Okay.
There is some mention of, means how Parikshit served Sukadev Goswami before he inquired.
Because it's not clearly mentioned, but definitely Parikshit Maharaj says, Kim punar darshana sparshat pada shochasanadivihi. So if he did not actually do it, how would we gratefully speak about his opportunity to serve Sukadev Goswami that way?
Like it was mentioned, there was mentioned also that previously they had never met, something like that when we were reading.
Yeah, but after, see, it is not about the amount of time that a disciple serves his guru. It's the sincerity with which he serves. Like Brahmaji, like we were discussing yesterday, few seconds of austerity, immediately the Supreme Lord could understand his sincerity and intention. Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami also, Parikshit Maharaj may not have physically served him for a very long time, but the sincerity with which he received Sukadeva Goswami and endeavored to serve him, that itself was very much acknowledged by Sukadeva Goswami. That's why he stayed for 7 days and spoke Srimad Bhagavatam.
Also, one more thing, Roji, about Parikshit Maharaj. Like he was a very devoted king. So he definitely might have taken guidance of some Rishi Muni or some devotee before.
Possible.
Is there any mention of it, something like that?
Not in Bhagavatam, maybe in some other literature it may be there. In Bhagavatam it's not mentioned. Advaitu.
Project related to this only, like Parikshit just wanted to clarify. Parikshit Maharaj also, he must have done his duties properly, his service to Lord when he was king. So is it that made the ground fertile for him to receive?
Yeah. Yes. Parikshit Maharaj did not become a devotee by Sukadeva Goswami's association. So, because before this conversation happened only, you know, Saratya Parashada Sevana Sakya Dautya Virasana Anugamana. So those things are there. But this was just irrespective of whether Sukadeva Goswami would have arrived there or not arrived there, Parikshit Maharaj would have gone back home back to Godhead. But that is not to minimize the role of Sukadeva Goswami, but that is just to glorify who Parikshit Maharaj was. But it is our fortune that both of them met and we have received Bhagavatam for our own deliverance. So, like that.
Yaduta aham te aprishto vairajat purushadinam yatasi tadupakyaste prashnan anyams chakratsnashah.
I will explain what you asked me. Idam yata asit, especially you asked about the universal form, how the universe arose from the universal form. I will answer all the questions including this question. So one more universal form description is coming up in the 10th chapter. So So that brings us to the end of this ninth chapter. So we can move on to the tenth chapter. Srila Prabhupada titles this chapter as Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. And Srila Vishnu Devadatta titles this chapter as the 10 characteristics of a Purana and the third description of the universal form. So the first theme that will be discussed is 10 characteristics. Second theme would be the third description of the universal form. Because he had mentioned the Puranam Dashalakshanam, so he is going to speak about how, what are those 10 Lakshanas, and he is going to speak about those Lakshanas. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam otayah manvantaresha anukata nirodho muktirashrayah. In this Purana there are 10 topics: sarga, visarga, sthanam, poshanam, uti, manvantara, ishanukata, nirodha, mukti and ashraya. 10 topics. So what these 10 are, he is going to explain. But before that he says, dashamasya vishuddhyartam navanam ihalakshanam varnayanti mahatmana shrutena artena cha anjasa. So, mahatmana anjasa varnayanti. The great Mahatma such as Vidura, Maitreya, etc., they properly describe Navanam Ihalakshanam, these other 9 topics, Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham, in order to impart the highest knowledge of the 10th topic. So if you remember the beginning of second canto we were discussing, this mood is there only in Srimad Bhagavatam. We are discussing why such exclusive emphasis on Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the only literature in which every single topic other than ashraya that is discussed with the sole purpose of enhancing our appreciation of the 10th topic. Whereas in no other Purana, in no other literature, this is so consistently followed. This is according to the admission of Srimad Bhagavatam itself. So, it is mentioned that 12th canto mentions Kalimala Samhati Kalano Akilesho Harir Itaratra Na Giyate Vyabhikshnam Iha Tu Punar Bhagavan Ashesha Murti Paripatito Anupadam Kata Prasangaihi. Narayana, the soul of this universal form, who annihilates the accumulated sins of Kali, is not glorified much in other works. Itaratra na giyatehi abhikshnam. Abhikshnam means constant. Na abhikshnam giyate. That constant glorification of Lord Narayana is not there in other literatures. Even if there is a seeming glorification of Lord Narayana, that is glorification as the sadhana, not as the prayojan. Any glorification as sadhana is no glorification at all. The real glorification is glorification of the prayojan. So, Bhagavatam glorifies Bhagavan as the prayojan. Prema towards Bhagavan as the prayojan. Patir Gatischa Andaka Vrishni Satvatam. He is both the Pati and Gati. He is both the means to attain the success and he is success itself. So that kind of glorification is there only in Bhagavatam and no other literature. So the other literatures speak directly about Bhagavan, but it is not a glorification of Bhagavan. It is a glorification of Mukti, or it is a glorification of Swarga or something like that. Whereas Bhagavatam, even in not directly speaking about Bhagavan, is actually glorifying Bhagavan. So that is the difference between the other literatures and Bhagavatam itself. So Bhagavatam says, Harir Akileshava Akileshava Harihi Itaratra Na Adikshnam Giyate. The Supreme Lord Hari is not so much glorified in other works as much as he is glorified in Bhagavatam. But Bhagavan Ashesha Murti, but the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, who has unlimited forms, Punaha, again and again, Paripatito Anupadam, in every pada, he is only glorified, Katha Prasangaihi, on the pretext of speaking various kinds of narrations, ultimately Supreme Lord is only glorified. But that purpose is not consistent in other literatures. So even when Bhagavatam speaks about, it is mentioned that Dharma Projita Kaitavatra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. Bhagavatam at the outset kicks out all kinds of cheating religion, which means nothing less than pure devotional service. But it very much speaks about Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and all that. May not mean in every canto, but it very much speaks about it. But the purpose is glorification of Bhagavan only. So no one who would learn about Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga through Bhagavatam will ever become an Ashtanga Yogi or Jnana Yogi or Karma Yogi. That is guaranteed. Because the writer has his purpose in mind. So therefore, even those sections which speak about these other paths are actually speaking about pure devotional service only. It's actually glorifying Bhagavan only. Even the section about demigod worship is actually speaking about worship of Krishna only. Conclusively. In conclusion. So therefore, no other literature shares this mood of Srimad Bhagavatam. So even Vidura, we'll read about Vidura's endeavor to find Maitreya Muni and hear from him. But Vidura is whose son? Vyasadeva's son. And Maitreya was Vyasadeva's classmate. They both studied together under Brihaspati. So it is mentioned that when Vidura approached Maitreya, Maitreya was wondering, here is the son of Vyasadeva. Why has he taken so much pain in approaching me? Vyasadeva is the compiler of the great Mahabharata, the magnum opus of Vyasadeva. Why has he come all the way to hear from me? Of the two, Maitreya and Vyasadeva, who is well known? Everyone knows Vyasadeva. Not many people know Maitreya. So why has the son of Vyasadeva come all the way to hear from Maitreya Muni? So Vidura himself clarifies this. He answers, he says, Paravaresham Bhagavan Vratani Shrutani me Vyasa Mukad Abhikshnam Atripnamak Shulla Sukavahanam Tesham Rite Krishna Katam Ratogat. He says, O great person, Maitreya, Shrutani me Abhikshnam, I have repeatedly heard Paravaresham Vratani about the nature of exalted persons and about the nature of not so exalted persons, Vyasa Mukad, from the mouth of Vyasadeva. But Tesham Atrupnuma, but I have never been very much satisfied. Why? Kshulla Sukavahanam, because it gave me insignificant happiness. There was no continuous glorification of Krishna. So therefore it did not give me any satisfaction. Krishna Katamrita Ogat, there was no abundant sweetness of Krishna Katha in these literatures. So therefore I have come to you. You speak Krishna Katha. Whatever it may be, and later he says, speak in such a way that it concludes in glorification of Vishnu, Krishna. So, all the descriptions of Bhagavatam are conclusively glorifying Krishna. So, every letter, every alphabet is meant to eventually inspire one towards Shuddha Bhakti. The alphabet itself may not be speaking about Shuddha Bhakti, but it is meant to create appreciation for Shuddha Bhakti. Like that. So, before I take your question, Srila Prabhupada commenting on this verse, he writes, Vidura explained to Maitreya his position of being fully satiated with the knowledge of mundane social and political topics and have no more interest in them. He was anxious to hear transcendental topics regarding Lord Shri Krishna. Because there were insufficient topics directly concerning Krishna in the Puranas, Mahabharata, etc., he was not satisfied and wanted to know more about Krishna. Vidura wanted to hear everything from Maitreya, and so he inquired from him. But he desired that all the topics be in relationship with Krishna. That's the glory of Bhagavatam. Navanam ihalakshanam dashamasya vishuddhyartam. The 9 topics are spoken for the sole purpose of bringing out the perfect appreciation of the 10th topic. As fire is never satisfied in its consumption of firewood, so a pure devotee of the Lord never hears enough about Krishna. Historical events and other narrations concerning social and political incidents all become transcendental as soon as they are in relationship with Krishna. That is the way to transform mundane things into spiritual. The whole world can be transformed into Vaikuntha if all worldly activities are dovetailed with Krishna. Like that. So, if you remember at the beginning of the second canto, we saw in this connection, we saw 2 examples, 2 analogies that I gave. Anyone remembers? How the other 9 topics are meant to glorify the 10th topic. Yeah, Mukta Kesh Prabhu.
You are telling about someone glorifies CAP. Glorify Adva Prabhu, like that.
Correct. Yeah. So that's one analogy. Second analogy, Rakesh Prabhu.
Like somebody walking from Goshala to like direction, you are telling it is in northeast.
Yeah.
But he may not directly go in the northeast.
Northeast direction. That's one example. You know, he may have to go left, right, you know, north, east, west, but eventually he is taking you in the 3 northeast direction only. Fine. Third analogy, Advai Prabhu.
That one, which like on deities, there are different
focus lights. I gave the example of focus lights. You know, there are many focus lights which are there positioned at strategic positions so that we can appreciate the form of Radha Vrindavan Vihari and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if the focus lights are not there, then Vrindavan Vihari and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are not any less beautiful. They are still, they possess the same transcendental beauty, but we cannot appreciate. So therefore, we should not think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha Vrindavan Vihari are dependent on the focus lights to enhance their beauty. But we need the focus lights so that we can appreciate the beauty of Shri Radha Vrindavan Vihari and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So similarly, the 10th canto topics are independent. They don't need the support of the other 9 cantos, but we need their support. In fact, it is the 10th canto topics which support all the other 9 cantos, all the other 9 topics. The other 9 topics take their support from the 10th canto. ultimately they are discussed for the sole reason of helping us develop the right appreciation of the 10th topic. So like that. So the glory of Bhagavatam is that every single syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is there for the sole purpose of helping us develop the perfect appreciation of Krishna. Therefore, this literature is unique. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls Bhagavatam as Puranam Amalam, as the spotless Pramanam Amalam, as the spotless Pramana. He doesn't just call it spotless Purana, it is spotless Pramana. Amongst all the proofs, the spotless proof is Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. Ashutosh, you had a question?
So, Vidura came to Maitri Muni after hearing from Vyasadev or after reading Vyasadev what he had written?
After hearing Vyasa Mukad Abhikshnam, he says.
Okay, so Vyasadev described other topics other than Krishna, that is what he is.
He's telling, is mainly the previous verse, the verse previous to this talks about Mahabharata actually. Bharatam Aha Krishna, like he says. But then in response to that, he says that, hey, your father has written magnum opus, Mahabharata. Still, will you have come to me? He says that I have so many times heard about that, but it was not filled with Krishna Gata. So, I was not satisfied.
Okay.
So, I want to hear pure Krishna Gata. So, therefore, I have come to you.
Okay.
Like that he has mentioned.
Vidura could have asked Vyasadeva to do
that. Vyasadeva also. He would have spoken Srimad Bhagavatam. But anyway, yeah, can you pass me Baldev?
We also hear in third canto when Vidura meets Uddhava.
Yeah.
So Uddhava, so Vidura is asking all these questions to Uddhava, and Uddhava says better you should go to Maitreya because he was also there.
Yeah.
In the discussion, he is. So Prabhupada mentions as etiquette, he wanted to guide him to a experienced person, little more in age.
Yeah.
So how do you understand this? That because it was. With, I don't know, with, here it looks like Vidura went because she wanted to hear Bhagavatam from Maitreya, but it looks like Uddhava had guided him, right?
Yeah, Uddhava had guided him. And also he found that instruction appropriate. It's not just because Uddhava guided, but also he found that instruction appropriate. That's why he goes and, so it was not solely because he wanted to hear from Maitreya. But after being guided, he found that instruction appropriate. That's why he took all the trouble to go all the way to the banks of Saraswati to meet Maitreya.
One more thing, I remember reading Prabhupada's purport. He mentioned that Maitreya Muni is not a pure devotee of the Lord.
Yeah. In the sense that there is a slight tinge of jnana.
Okay.
But he was going to repeat whatever he heard from Krishna.
Krishna.
And because Vidura is such an exalted pure devotee, he had that ability to take the essence. Past time. Nay, I mean, these personalities are aware of the Lord's desire. So, they allow the Lord's desire to. Have Bhishma Dev, he had to be taken to Bhishma Dev, like that. Yeah, Muktakesh Prabhu. Last question and then we'll move on.
I heard one of the lecture that not all people can take up Bhagavatam philosophy. Because they are not meant for. So for them, Mahabharata should be told. Is this right understanding?
I mean, for what reason they cannot accept Bhagavatam?
because people are now this basically Srimad Bhagavatam talks about transcendence.
Hmm.
So first come to the level of simple morality. That morality one gets through Mahabharata.
Okay.
I heard, is this right?
Okay. So yes, Balde Prabhu wants to answer this question.
Sorry, but I was
Maryada Vatikram.
No, no, this is proper Maryada. If I had spoken, it would be Maryada Vatikram.
No, no, no. I had a beautiful Bhagavatam class of Kamal Lochan Prabhu in Kanpur. Remember? Your class in, we had this convention. She was mentioning Bhagavat actually is meant for everyone.
Mm.
And then he mentioned, but Bhagavatam can be only relished by those who are pure. It is meant for everyone, but it can be relished only by those who are pure. But what will happen, generic people, they will hear Bhagavatam and they will learn after this, people will relish Bhagavatam. Okay? They will learn after this. So whatever remains that, people are relishing it through, that they will catch and they will accept that relishment. But it is for everyone. We said that actually this comes in Bhagavat Mahatma only. And Bhagavatam is part of Paramahansas, but when everyone hears, especially from a Paramahansa, they will release whatever little what they could release as per their position. Like we are releasing from Balram Shakti Prabhu.
No, actually, we had discussed about it when we began discussing the second kind of first chapter. I'll just touch upon this topic because this is somewhat a little bit close to my heart. Okay. Yeah, just one or two points I just wanted to add. So we were discussing, if you remember, that why there are so many why is there so much discussion about the universal form and other topics like liberation, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amal Puran, we were discussing. So, one of the first thing that we discussed was, Srimad Bhagavatam is not just for the Paramahamsas, same point that Prabhuji was mentioning. So, let us try to understand the purpose of the speakers of Bhagavatam, what they spoke for. So, Vyasadeva spoke Bhagavatam, Anarthopasamam Shakshat Bhakti Yogam Adokshaje Lokasya Janato Vidvams Chakra Satyata Sumita. So he says that he wrote this Bhagavatam out of compassion for those people who are struggling with the Anarthas. So he does, the prime audience, he clearly says, is conditioned souls of this world. And Shukadeva Goswami, Yaswanubhavam Akilashrutisaramekam Adhyatmadipam Atitivarshatantamondam Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasa Sonam Upayami Gurum Muninam. So, his target audience when Shukadeva Goswami spoke was Samsarinam Karunayaha. He doesn't say Paramahamsanam Karunayaha. And this was meant for those who wanted to cross the ocean of material existence but very much suffering in it. And why did Maitreya speak Bhagavatam? He himself says, Soham danam kshulla sukaya dukkam mahatgatanam viramaya tasya pravartaye Bhagavatam Puranam. So he says that people of this world are engaged in, for shulla sukha, they are engaged in lot of mahatgatanam dukkam tasya viramaya pravartaye Bhagavatam Puranam. In order to stop this, he wrote Bhagavatam Puranam. So therefore, I am just trying to find out where in Bhagavatam it says it is meant only for Paramahamsas. So if that is the case, then our acharyas have not given us something which is sufficient. Or our parampara is only for those who are already paramahamsas, not for common people.
we should go to some other parampara. Because in our parampara, there is only one pramana that has been recommended. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. And if that is meant only for Paramahamsas, then we should be looking for some other parampara then. So as Prabhuji mentioned, the same thing. Syat Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitapya Vidya Pittopatattara Sanasya Narochikanu Kintu Adarad Anudinam Kalusanga Jushta Swadvi Kramad Bhavati. So, it is mentioned that for those whose tongue has been afflicted with jaundice, they cannot relish the taste of sugarcane juice. But sugarcane juice is their best medicine. But for those who have become healthy, they can perfectly relish the taste of sugarcane juice. When that sugarcane juice touches their tongue, it creates only relish and nothing else. But for those who have not, those who are not healthy but afflicted with jaundice, they need it the most. For the Paramahamsas, it's a luxury. For the conditioned souls, it's a need. It's a life-sustaining force. Talking about Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam second verse only says, Dharma Projita verse, it says, Sad Ishvara Sadhya Vridya Varudyate Prakritabir Chushru Shubit Tatshana. So, commenting on this verse, on this line, Srila Vishnu Thakur says, Ishvara Sadhya Vridya Varudyate Atra Kritibiri Shushrushivit Tachana. So there are two kinds of practitioners. One is Kritibihi. Kritibihi means Paramahamsas, who are perfectly accomplished in practice. But Shushrushibi are those who are not yet accomplished, those who are struggling with anarthas. So when these two people take up to Bhagavatam, what is the effect? This verse says, Kritibihi Ishvara Sadhya Vridya Varudyate. For the established practitioners, the Supreme Lord is immediately manifest in the heart when as soon as he hears Bhagavatam. We see all the Chaitanya Charitamrita characters. As soon as one verse they hear, you know, Pundarik Vidyanidhi tears his dress and he is falling down, rolling on the ground. There's so many. This is just one example. Ishvara Sadhya Vridya Varudyate. This is for Kritibihi. But what is for Shushrushubi? Tatshanat Ishvara Hridya Varudyate. Gradually over a period of time, the Supreme Lord manifests within his heart. So therefore, Bhagavatam is meant for the relish of Paramahamsas, but Bhagavatam is the means of purification for everyone else. And the second cant also we saw, Punantite Vishaya Vidushitashayam Vrajanti Chacharana Sararuhantikam Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmanas Satam Katamratam Shravana Puteshu Sambratam Punantite Vishaya Vidushitashayam Vrajanti Chacharana Sararuhantikam. That it is, it purifies the heart of those whose heart is not yet purified, and after purification, once the heart is purified for those Paramahamsas, Vrajanti Tacharana Saroruhantikam, it immediately takes them to the lotus feet of Krishna. So therefore, as Prabhuji mentioned, Bhagavatam is meant for both. That's the vision of Narada Muni when he gave the instruction to Vyasadev. That's the vision of Vyasadev when he wrote it. And that's the, he says, Vichakshano asya arhati veditim vibho anantaparasya mamrittitastukam pravartamanasya, what is it? Pravartamanasya gunair anatmanas tato bhavan darshaya cheshtitam vibho. He says, my dear Vyasadev, the Vichakshanas, the very intelligent people, they can understand the absolute truth through Vedanta Sutras. But for people suffering in this material world with sense gratificatory desires, for them also you have to write a literature that is capable of delivering them. because they are very much attached to sense gratification. Tato bhavan darshaya cheshtitam vibho. Therefore, you should lay to the literature about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, after reading which these people who have attraction to sense gratification, they can also attain the highest goal. Swabhava rattasya mahan vyatikramah. He chastises Vyasadeva for giving karmakanda for them who already have a natural tendency for sense enjoyment. So what does he offer as an alternative? Bhagavatam only. So when when Narada Muni approached Vyasadeva, he had common people in mind. When Vyasadeva wrote, he had common people in mind. When Shukadeva Goswami spoke, he had common people in mind. When Maitreya Muni spoke, he had common people in mind. So, and Bhagavatam is quite clear about it. Otherwise, we should be looking to some other sampradaya. Okay, so now what are these 10 topics we will try to understand? Bhutamatrendriyadiyam janma sarga udahritah brahmano guna vaishamyat visarga paurusha smritah. So the first three lines describe the first topic, sarga. Bhutamatra indriyadiyam janma sarga udahritah. What is sarga? Creation of bhuta, matra, indriyadiyam. Bhuta is the material elements, matra is the tanmatras, indriya is senses, dhyam is mahatattva in this case. Dhyam could sometimes refers to mahatattva, sometimes it refers to mind, sometimes it refers to intelligence. So, creation of these elements is sarga. When does that happen? Brahmano guna vaishamyad. When the Lord transforms the gunas through his glands. Okay, so that is sarga. That is described in second canto and third canto. So third canto predominantly. So therefore the third canto is sarga is attributed generally to third canto. Even though these topics may appear in other cantos, but predominantly this topic is described in third canto and second canto. Visarga paurusha smritaha. Visarga is the creation of the bodies of the jivas carried out by Brahma. Paurusha means creation of bodies in this context. So, that is described predominantly in the fourth canto. Because whole of fourth canto is creation by the descendants of Swayambhu Manu. Even the third canto also possesses such descriptions, but fourth canto is exclusively dedicated. So therefore, Visarga is described in fourth canto. Visarga is attributed to fourth canto. Stithir Vaikuntha Vijaya Poshanam Tadanugraha Manvantarani Saddharma Uta Yakkarma Vasanaha. Stithir Vaikuntha Vijaya Sthanam refers to the Lord protecting his devotee. This shows the excellence of the Lord. Of course, sthiti also refers to the sthanam, means the how the planets are arranged. The Vedic cosmology described in the fifth canto. Poshanam tad anugraha. Poshanam means the Lord's mercy. Especially to his special mercy to his devotees. Sixth canto, starting from Ajamil, to what extent the Lord can grow to identify someone as a devotee. Someone calling his son Narayan, addressing his son Narayan, the Lord is willing to accept him as a devotee and show his mercy. That is the extent to which the Lord can go. And to give mercy to you, doesn't matter in what body you are in, even if you are in the body of a demon, you can get mercy, Vritrasur. Even if one may be a mixed devotee like Indra, the Lord still bestows mercy upon him. So all these episodes describe Poshanam. Of course, this Poshanam is there in all the other cantos, but exclusively dedicated to this one canto. Then he says, Manvantarani Saddharma. So Manvantara refers to the conduct of the kings during the Manvantara period. So there are, as we saw, there are six different personalities in every Manvantara for taking care of the affairs of the Manvantara. Manu, Manuputras, Manvantara Avataras, the Devatas, Indra, and the Saptarishis. Each one of them, they have a particular role to play in the conduct of the affairs of the Manvantara. So, as we saw the other day, Maitreya was speaking to Vidura, he started by describing about the Swayambhuva Manu in the third canto. But as soon as Vidura heard about Swayambhuva Manu, he said, "Oh, this Swayambhuva Manu is such a wonderful personality. I would really like to hear about the genealogical line of this Swayambhuva Manu. Can you explain?" So starting from third canto, beginning, third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, sixth canto, four cantos he spoke about Swayambhuva Manu's lineage. And then seventh canto was conversation between Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj. At eighth canto, actually, Parikshit Maharaj told Shukadeva Goswami, "Actually, I didn't tell you, but I wanted to hear about the other Manus also." So, already seven cantos have gone. 14 Manus appear in the day of Brahma. I have a desire to hear about all of them. He says, "Okay, now I will stay focused." So, and in one canto, Shukadeva Goswami speaks about all the 14 Manus, describing who was the Manu, who are the Manuputras, who are the Manvantara Avataras, who are the Saptarishis, and so on. And in describing that, when we would mention, "Oh, in this Manvantara, Lord Hari was the Manvantara Avatar, and he performed, he is the one who performed Gajendra Moksha." So then Parikshit Maharaj asks, "Oh, Gajendra Moksha, this is a very wonderful pastime. Can you please narrate this Gajendra Moksha?" Like that. And then next Manvantara, Lord Ajita was the Manvantara avatar. He was the one who was involved in the Samudra Manthan. "Oh, Samudra Manthan, wonderful pastime. Can you please speak about it?" Like that. So whole 8th canto pastimes are those performed by the Manvantara avatars. So therefore, 8th canto is dedicated to the topic of Manvantara. Then, Utaya Karma Vasana. Uti refers to how impressions inspire action, which lead to subsequent birth. So, this is described in the 7th canto through two contrasting examples of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu, even though he was the son of two pious personalities, Diti and Kashyapa, but nevertheless, when they united at a time when Diti had a very inappropriate desire, it was an inappropriate time. So therefore, if they united the child, a child with inappropriate impressions would take shelter of that womb. So when they united, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha took shelter. And their lives were inspired by those impressions. Even though you may say that, you know, they are Jaya and Vijaya, but when they are performing pastimes here, one should not say that, one should accept that their actions were inspired by their impious impressions that they are accumulated. Otherwise, then there is no real lesson that you can derive from these pastimes. And when it comes to Prahlad Maharaj, even though born from a demoniac father and mother, because in the womb he got to accumulate lot of devotional impressions, when he took birth, his activities were inspired by those impressions, right from the birth. So, This is Uti. Through these two contrasting examples, how much impressions inspire actions? And the last five chapters, where Narada Muni speaks to Yudhishthir Maharaj about Varnashram, the whole system of Varnashram is based on Uti. Sadrisham Cheshtate Swasya Prakritir Jnanavanapi Prakritim Nyanti Bhutani Nigrahat Kim Karishyati. Krishna says, everyone naturally inspired to act according to the impressions that one has accumulated. And the Varnashram system very much identifies and appreciates this. Everyone will act according to their impressions. So Krishna decided, why not create a system where people are allowed to act according to the impressions that they have accumulated and still reward them for it. So that is Varnashram system. You all want sense gratification according to the impressions that you have accumulated. If only you agree to fulfill those sense gratification desires through my system, then I will reward you for acting according to your inclinations. So that is Varnashram system. Act according to your inclinations and get rewarded. So all the various kinds of prescribed duties that are prescribed according to Varna and Ashrama are those duties which the living entity in that particular body naturally wants to perform. One in Kshatriya body naturally wants to fight. So for him, your prescribed duty is fighting. He thinks, how wonderful. A Brahmana naturally likes to live a simple life and study the scriptures. But your prescribed duty is to live simply and study scriptures, teach to others. Oh, this is very nice. Yeah. So, the Varnashram system is a system which facilitates this natural nature of the living entities and thereby it also purifies them of those desires. So that is described by Narada Muni to Vyasadeva in the last five chapters of 7th canto. 7th canto talks about Uti. Then Ishanukata. What is Ishanukata? Avataranu charitam hares chasyanu vartinam pumsami shakata prokta nana kyano pabrahmhitaha. Ishakata refers to descriptions of the Lord's avatars and their devotees. Harehe avatara anucharitam cha asya anuvartinam pumsam anucharitam. Descriptions of the Lord's avatars and their devotees. Nana akhyana upabrahmhitam. Of course, you may say that the whole Bhagavatam is filled with description of the Lord's avatars. Their pastimes and the pastimes of the devotees. What is so special about 9th canto? He says, Nana Akhyana Upabrahmhitam. It is filled with many, many short stories. If you see 9th canto, it is filled with many, many short stories. Sometimes one chapter has two short stories. Like that. So that is the nature of Ishanukata. Nirodho Syanu Shayanam Atmana Sahashaktidihi Muktirihitvanyatarupam Sorupena Vyavastitihi. Nirodho Atmanaha Anushayanam. Nirodha refers to the merging of the Jiva Sahashaktibihi along with his material identity into the Lord at the time of final devastation of the universe. So there are many kinds of Nirodha. Nirodha that happens during partial dissolution, Nirodha that happens during final dissolution. Death of the living entity is one kind of a Nirodha. Like these different types of Nirodha is described in the 12th canto. Therefore, Nirodha is attributed to 12th canto. And Muktir Hitva Anyatarupam Sarupyana Devastitihi. Mukti means the Jiva's attainment of his form as the pure Atma or as an associate of the Lord. Swarupyana Vyavastitihi. Establishing himself in his original Swarupa as servant of the Lord. Hitva Anyata Rupam, after giving up all kinds of gross and subtle material bodies. This is Mukti. So this part of Mukti is described in great detail through two two conversations in the 11th canto. One that happened between Nili Maharaj and the Navayogendras, and the second that happened between Krishna and Uddhava, which is called Uddhava Gita. So through these two powerful conversations, Shukadeva Goswami establishes this theme of mukti.
Abhasascha nirodascha yatostyadyavasiyate sa ashraya param brahma paramatmeti shabdyate.
The ashraya, saha ashraya, that personality is called ashraya, yato asti adyavasiyate, from whom arises abhasascha nirodascha. It started with sarga, which is called abhasa, and ends with nirodha, 12th canto. From the first topic to 9th topic, all these topics, from that person from whom these 9 topics arises, is called saha ashraya. That personality is called ashraya. Param brahma paramatmeti shabdyate, and that personality is also addressed as paramatma and brahman. Okay, so this is the definition of the 10th topic. So now we will see through two verses, Shukadeva Goswami will establish how he will take the example of Paramatma here. Taking the example of Paramatma, he will explain how Paramatma is the ashraya. Because he says that the absolute truth, Bhagavan, he is the ashraya, but he is also perceived as Brahman and Paramatma. So this is the ashraya tattva. So now he is going to establish how Paramatma is ashraya tattva. Taking one of these three principles as an example, he is going to establish. Two verses. Little technical, but very interesting explanation that he is going to give. We will take a short 2-minute break and then we will continue this discussion.
So, we will continue. So, in the 7th verse, he mentions, Abhasascha nirodascha yato astya adyavasiyate sa ashraya param brahma paramatmeti shabdyate. So, the 10th topic is the ashraya in the sense that if Bhagavan is, topic is not there, then there is no purpose of describing the other 9 topics. If Krishna is not there, then the there is no purpose of other 9 topics. The same way as there is no purpose of those focused lights if Vrindavan Vihari and Mahaprabhu would not come and grace that Garbhagraha. There is no purpose. So the same way, so in that sense, you know, the 10th topic of Krishna, it supports all the other topics. And he says that this Lord is also, the ashraya is also sometimes called Brahman and Paramatma. So now, as I mentioned before, the example of Paramatma will be taken to establish how he is the ashraya tattva.
Yodhyatmikoyam purushah sosav evadi daivikah yastatro bhaya vicheda purushohyadi bhautikah.
So he says, yaha adhyatmikoyam purushah. He is talking about three purushas here. The adhyatmik purusha, the adidaivik purusha, and the adibhautik purusha. So the adhyatmik purusha is the subtle sense organ. The subtle organ. Sukshmendriya. And the adidaivik
Purusha is the presiding deities of the senses. And the Adibhautik, we saw Adidaiva, Adibhuta and Adhyatma, if you remember. Adhyatma refers to the subtle senses. The Adibhuta refers to the gross senses. And the Adidaiva refers to the sense devatas. So these three are mentioned as Purushas because sometimes the living entity is sometimes identifying with the gross body, sometimes identifying with the subtle body, and sometimes his mode of being the controller is identifying with the Adidaiva element. So Adidaiva is the sense devatas who control the gross and subtle senses. So when the mode of controllership indicates the living entity's identification with living entity's identification with the Adidaiva. And the sense of being the doer mentality, Kriya Shakti, that identification is Adhyatma, with the subtle senses. And sometimes he identifies with his gross body. So, that is the Adibhuta identification. So, these three are called Purushas. First thing, Jiva itself is not Purusha. Jiva is Prakriti only. Para Prakriti, but nevertheless Prakriti. But the Jiva thinks he is Purusha because of the enjoying mentality. And this Jiva in its conditioned state is prone to misidentify. So not only is he not Purusha, but he identifies as being a Purusha, but he is not identifying with the self also. He is identifying either sometimes with the Adidaivik covering or Adhyatmik covering or Adibhautik covering. So therefore they are addressed as Purusha. Even though they are not, that is all three are matter only. Adidaivik, Adhyatmik and Adibhautik are matter. So matter is Prakriti, Jiva is also Prakriti, but because of wrong identification, he may think of himself to be the Purusha, and he may think of himself to be one of these coverings. You understand? He may think himself to be the Purusha, and his identity as who is he? Sometimes he may identify with the Adidaivik layer, sometimes with the Adibhautik layer, sometimes with the Adhyatmik layer. So therefore they are addressed as Purushas. Muktakeshwaru.
Practically, when we identify with devatas, other we can understand gross and subtle senses.
See, not in the sense of when we don't identify with the deva literally. Now I am thinking I am Indra, now I am thinking, not in that way. But we think we have control over everything. I think I am in control of my seeing faculty, I am in control of my hearing faculty, I am in control of my mind, I am in control of my intelligence. When all these are controlled by sense devatas. So that's the point. So therefore they are called as Purushas. Adhyatmik Purusha, Adidaivik Purusha and Adibhautik Purusha. So he says, Yo Adhyatmikoyam Purushah Sosav Evadi Daivikah Yas Tatra Ubaya Vichedah Purushohi Adibhautikah. He says, literally this verse means that who is the Adhyatmik Purusha is the same as Adidaivik Purusha, and that Adidaivik Purusha is non-different from Adhyatmik Purusha. So, what he is telling is the Adhyatmik Purusha is the Adidaivik Purusha, the Adidaivik Purusha is the Adibhautik Purusha. So, what does it literally mean? And what does it have anything to do with the Ashraya Tattva? Ashraya Tattva ke baad suddenly as a cryptic verse kyun bol diya? What are these three? Adibhautik Purusha, Adhyatmik Purusha, first time aise sun rahe hain kya ye? So then he says,
So these three Purushas are non-different in the sense their purpose is same. You can say a plate, spoon and fork, all three are same. And in fact you add them in the same category as cutlery. Right? So similarly, the adhyatmic layer, adhibhautic layer and adhidhavik layer also you put in the same category as material body. All three constitute the material body. Because the purpose is same. What is the purpose of spoon, fork and plate? To help a person eat comfortably. What is the purpose of material body? To facilitate the enjoyment of the jiva. Material enjoyment of the jiva. So this same purpose is shared by the adhyatmic layer or the adhidhautic layer or the adhidhavik layer. So in purpose they are non-different. Okay. But this is not a statement. He is not full stop here. Kama. He is going to continue this discussion now in the next verse.
एकम एकत राभावे यदा नोपलभामहे त्रितयम् तत्र यो वेद स आत्मा स्वाश्रयाश्रयः.
He says एकम एकतर अभावे यदा न उपलभामहे. In the absence of even one of these, it is not possible to perceive the sense object. Okay. If the gross eye may be very good, but if the subtle eye is affected, then one cannot see. And the gross eye and subtle eye can function properly only if Suryadev is happy. The sense there, the adhidaivik layer. So, ekam ekatara abhave yadana upalavamahe. In the absence of even one of them functioning properly, the purpose of the other two also cannot be fulfilled. Which means each of these Purushas are interdependent. The adhyatmic layer, the adhidaivik layer and the adhibhautik layer, all three have to function. Only then the living entity can fulfill his desire of sense gratification. Tritayam tatra yoveda. But that personality who is independent of these three Purushas, sa atma, he is atma. So the living entity, to perform any of its sensory activities, does not need the assistance of adhyatmic layer, adhibhautic layer or adhibhautic layer or adhidaivik layer, The living entity has its own capacity to perform all these sensory activities. If only it identifies itself as Atma. Only because it wants to enjoy separately from Krishna, therefore this identification with these three layers is facilitated by the avidya potency. But the living entity does not need an adhyatmic layer or an adhibhautik layer or an adhidaivik layer to perform any of its sensory activities. Okay. So therefore it is mentioned, Tritayam tatra yoveda sa atma. But that personality who is independent of these three Purushas, adhyatmic Purusha, adhidaivik Purusha and adhibhautik Purusha, he is atma. But he may be independent of the three Purushas, but he is not absolutely independent because he is dependent on the Paramatma. And who is the Ashraya of the Paramatma? Sva Ashraya Ashraya. He is his own Ashraya in one sense. Because of his being non-different from Bhagavan,
So there is no ashraya. But at the same time, he is an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan only. In that sense, he is Eka Amshena Stito Jagat, Krishna says. So, so in this way he establishes the Ashraya Tattva of Paramatma. He says, in this condition, in this material world, the living entity is identified with these three Purushas, Adhyatmik Purusha, Adhidaivik Purusha and Adhibhautik Purusha. But these three Purushas are dependent on each other's functioning properly. If even one of them malfunctions, then the purpose of the other two will not be met. So therefore, all three are dependent on each other. And all three are very much dependent on a living entity inhabiting that body. If there is no living entity inhabiting that body, then all three cannot function. So, but the living entity is not dependent on these three Purushas. But he is dependent on the fourth Purusha. That is Paramatma. And that Paramatma is not dependent on anyone. So he is Swa-Ashraya. He is his own Ashraya. In this way, he establishes the Ashraya Tattva of Paramatma. Is it clear? So that way he explains the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, these 10 topics are not topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. These are 10 topics of any Purana, Mahapurana. But only in Bhagavatam are these other 9 topics solely mentioned with the purpose of glorifying the 10th topic. That is not shared in any other Purana. That is the specific glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Shall we move on to the next topic, or is there any? Can you pass the mic to Premaninam, bro?
These are the 10 topics of any other Purana.
Purana, yeah.
So, an example like
those 18 Puranas,
yeah,
18 Mahapuranas, they all have these 10 topics.
So, they talk and glorify about what then? Sarga, Visarga, Sthana, Koshan, Utaya.
The primary goal is to glorify Lord Vishnu only, but it is not so consistent. Sometimes there are descriptions of those other 9 topics. Irrespective of glorification of the Supreme Lord also. It may not be it may not be so consistent in its glorification of the 10th topic of Krishna. But every single mention of the 9 topics in Bhagavatam is without any exception meant to glorify the 10th topic. But that kind of consistency is not there in the other Puranas.
They'll have some stories like we have Uti stories of Prahlad, Narada and Hiranyakashipu. So there also be some stories like
that. Yeah, there will also be some stories like that. Yeah. So now he is going to a different theme. He is going to start a different theme. You have a question? Yeah. So the next theme is he promised to answer about the Virat Purusha. Because Parikshit Maharaj had asked, you spoke about that Purusha who has his hands and feet as the various planets. Is there any more details to it like that he had asked? So now he is going to answer that question. Yeah.
I want to know, like, every time how, like, every day of Brahmaji starts with creation.
Visarga,
he starts with creation. So, that is secondary creation. So, and Mahavishnu, not that every day Mahavishnu have to do anything.
Uh-huh.
Mahavishnu does only after one life of,
but even
the empowerment for Brahmaji's creation also comes through the, because the Kala Shakti is coming through the glands of Mahavishnu.
Every day not means Garva, every day only not glands. Never.
See, it is mentioned that, you know, that the whole process of creation is empowered by Karana Dasa Vishnu's glands. So, does he glands every single day of Brahmaji? Not necessarily, but definitely Brahmaji's functioning is also dependent on the glands of, because the source of Kala Shakti is the glands of Karana Dasa Vishnu. So at every stage, it is dependent.
And also, like after every manvantara, like partial destruction happens the lower planet.
Yeah.
So after every manvantara, it happens. So
a partial destruction after every night of Brahmaji.
Every night.
During some manvantara transitions, some kind of a partial prelay happens, but it is not compulsory.
Okay.
But generally after, at the night of Brahmaji, one partial pralaya happens where all the planets till Swargaloka, they get destroyed. And at that time, the living entities from Patala to Swarga, they go inside the body of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu and stay there.
Means Brahmaji creating whole universe is not daily affair.
Brahmaji doesn't create the whole universe.
He gives bodies
to the living entities staying in Maharjana Tapa Satya Loka at the beginning.
In the first time.
But the bodies of those staying within the till Swarga, that happens every day.
Understood.
One of the two. Okay, the mic is there, so you can.
Of Prabhupada saying that Brahmaji is the first engineer of the universe, like that he says, no?
Engineer in the sense he engineers the bodies of the living entities. Can you pass the mic?
There is some Shivapurana also process, so in that also Ashray is given as Vishnu only, Vishnu or Krishna.
Yeah, but the worshippers of Shiva cannot see it. Because it's written in such a way so that they can see only Lord Shiva as their Ashray. Because that's how they will, they can retain their faith in Lord Shiva. So, these Puranas are not ordinary literatures. It reveals multiple things for multiple readers. So, the demigod worshippers also get their faith for worshipping the demigods through Vedic literatures only. But, a devotee, when he reads that Vedic literature, he sees it clearly that the Vedic literatures are not recommending worship of anyone else other than Vishnu. Whereas someone who has already developed a desire to worship a particular demigod and who is consulting the literatures only for the paddhati, how to worship, for them the scriptures seem to glorify particular demigods, and it also gives them that paddhati. Because Krishna says that Yoyo yam yam tanam bhaktam shraddhayarchitam icchati. They have a desire to worship particular demigods. Tasya tasya achalam shraddham tameva vidadamyaham. I make that faith unflinching. How? Through the scriptures. But when a Vaishnava reads the scriptures, he does not find any contradiction there. So, a Shiva Puran might seemingly glorify Lord Shiva for the demigod worshippers, but for Vaishnavas, they understand it in the right perspective. They don't see any contradiction there. That's the point. Okay. Okay. So now, he is going to describe for the third time the Virat Purusha in this 10th chapter. But here this description has a different purpose. You have some question, Akesh Prabhu? So, the first description of the Virat Roop, what is the purpose? What is the object of meditation of the Virat Roop meditator? To explain that. When was the second description of the Virat Purusha? 5th and 6th chapters. What are the purpose? How large is the material and effective cause of this universe? Now we are going to see the third description of the universal form. The purpose of this description of the universal form is to show how desire is the cause of the gross and subtle bodies. So, we saw that everything that you see in the universal form, there is an equivalent of it in our own body. The Mahatattva in the universal form is the Chitta in our body. There is a universal mind, there is an equivalent of that mind in our body. The Sutra Tattva in the universal form is the Prana in our body, like that. So similarly, now it will describe that then the universal form desired to eat. So then what happened? Then the mouth manifested. Then within the mouth, the gross tongue, Talu, manifested. And within the gross tongue came the sense devata and the subtle sense organ. Jihva and Varuna came to reside in that tongue. And then taste manifested in that tongue. Then, so that all of these manifested, so that the universal form could fulfill its desire of eating. Then the universal form desired to see things. Then what manifested first? I'm giving you a sutra. If you remember this sutra, then you will understand this whole description. Akshini, the gross eye manifested first. So the gross organ is like the house. And within that house come to reside the master and the servant. The master is the sense devata, the servant is the sense, subtle sense. And after that, the sense object manifests. This is the order in which it will be described. Okay? So let's go over it. Then the universal form desired to see. So what happened then? Akshini manifested. Then in that house came to reside Suryadev and Chakshu. And then form, Rupa manifested. Okay. Then the universal form desired to understand itself. The universal form desired to understand itself. Yes. Karana manifested. So then what happened? Shrotra and the Digdevatas came to reside there. And then sound manifested. So this description is to show, so actually universal form is an imaginary conception. So what does it mean to say that the universal form desired to eat? That's a universal form desired to eat. What does it mean? Universal form imagination. Now you are telling the universal form desired to eat. So what kind of imagination? You say imagination and imagination. So what does it mean? So who can desire? Only a conscious entity can desire. Right? Who can desire material things? only a conscious living entity that is conditioned can desire material things. Correct? So, now I am giving you a hint. I have already given you the hint. Now you tell me, what does it mean when I say the universal form desired to eat? It means the jivas in that particular universe. So what it symbolically means is the manifestation of the gross organ and the subtle organ, or the gross elements and subtle elements in this universe, or in every living entity's body, is a product of his desire to enjoy in a particular way. So that is the purpose of this description. Otherwise, the universal form is an imaginary conception. So what does it mean when the universal form desires to do something? This is what it means. So this is to prove that whatever desire gives rise to material body, either in gross form or subtle form. That's the purpose of this description, to prove that how, you know, in a very symbolic way, this says, you know, how your every desire will give rise to a particular facility to fulfill that desire. When you want to eat, you need a gross organ, you need a subtle organ, you need the sense devata, you need the sense object, all of that manifests. But it will manifest only if you desire to enjoy in that particular way. So, desire to enjoy gives birth to facility to enjoy. Like that. So that's what we are going to see now. Okay. Purusho andam vinirbidya yada sausa vinirgataha atmano ayanam anvichan aposrakshit shuchishuchihi. So, he explains, when the pure Purusha, yada saha shuchi Purushaha, andam vinirbidya, separating himself from the universe, remained outside. This was described about which Purusha? Andam nirbidya nirgataha. Which Purusha? Garbhodara Sai Vishnu. Desiring a place to lie down in the universe, Atmano Ayanam Anvichan, he created the pure water of the Garbhotaka. Shuchihi Apaha Asrakshit. So, when what was mentioned in the 5th chapter about the entry of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu into this universe is little more elaborated here in this 10th chapter, where it is mentioned that Atmano, as soon as he entered the universe, he said, where is my room? Where do I stay? He said, okay, it seems like I have to create my own room. So he filled half the universe with his own sweat and he lied down there. So here, very interesting purport Srila Vishnuacharya Thakura writes here. Carefully here. After establishing the difference between the Jiva and the Lord through the 10 characteristics of the Mahapuran, Shukadeva Goswami now speaks about a topic that he promised to answer in the 9th chapter. I will speak about the Virat Purusha. Okay. People might ask, all of us might ask, why so much discussion about the Virat Rup? This Vishnuacharya Thakura writing. Why so much discussion about the Virat Rup? Why not narrate the sweet pastimes of the Leelavataras? We have had enough. This is true. But who is qualified to hear the pure pastimes of the Lord? Only pure devotees. But those who are engrossed in sense gratification cannot be woken up through the pure pastimes. Therefore, the most merciful Srimad Bhagavatam constantly plays some trick to wake them up. Just as a person haunted by ghost is revived by the ghost mantra, similarly, people sleeping on the lap of Maya cannot be woken up only through topics, can be woken up only through topics related to Maya, which means topics of the Purusha Avataras and Virat Purusha. This has been explained in 2753. Mayam Varnayato Amushya Ishwarasya Anumodatah Shrimvata Shraddaya Nityam Mayayatmana Muyyati. Srimad Bhagavatam, being the most merciful, also describes Brahman and Paramatma in order to produce bhakti in all kinds of practitioners. Because those who are attracted to those features, Brahman and Paramatma features, how will they take up to bhakti? So to inspire them, it speaks about these other topics also. And another reason, interesting reason he gives, hear carefully. Krishna is completely full of sweetness in his form, qualities and pastimes, and possesses dharma, jnana, bala and aishwarya. Since he contains all the avatars and also the features of Brahman and Paramatma, therefore he is worshipped by all types of devotees. If Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, and Krishna as the Sarvakarana Karanam includes all the other avatars, expansions and features including Brahman and Paramatma, therefore a whole description of Krishna should include the description of all these other avatars, Brahman, Paramatma also. So therefore, there is a description of all these other items also. Therefore, everything is consistent. Shilashna Jagadakur writes. Therefore, everything is consistent. Therefore, there is nothing wrong when Bhagavatam speaks about these subject matters. Because Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. And Krishna is full. Being the source of all these other avatars and forms. So therefore a description of these things is not inconsistent when it appears in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Taswavat sit svasrishtasu sahasram parivatsaran tena narayano nama yadapap purushodbhavah. Okay. He dwelled for many years in that water created from himself. Because of that he is called Narayana. Yad apah purushodbhavah. He is Nara Purusha. And the water that arose out of Nara is called Naraha. And because he is lying in those waters, Ayana, therefore he is called Narayana. Like that. Okay, then dravyam karma cha kalascha swabhavo jiva eva cha yadanugrahata santi nasanti yadupekshaya. So further, if you remember, we discussed about how Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu is also the effective cause of this universe. So that effective cause is described here. Only by connection with the Lord does matter, karma, time, swabhava and the totality of all the jivas can produce effects. Without his presence, they have no effect. So, dravyam karma cha kalascha svabhavo jiva eva cha yad anugrahatah santi nasanti yad upekshaya. So this is to prove that so here Srila Vishnu Chakal Thakur writes, this verse describes the influence of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, who lives as the super soul of the universal form. He is the super soul of the universal form. Dravya is the upadana karan. Kala, karma and swabhava are the nimitta karan. Okay, efficient cause. So upadana is material cause. So therefore this, by calling that the Supreme Lord, only by Garbhavagasaya Vishnu's mercy does the upadana function and the nimitta karan function, indicates indirectly the Supreme Lord is only the upadana nimitta karan also. So like that. And the jiva mentioned here refers to Hiranyagarbha, the conglomeration of all the individual souls of a particular universe. Okay. Eko nanatva manvichan yoga talpat samuttitah viryam hiranmayam devo mayaya vyasrijatrita adidaivam mata adhyatmam adibhut iti prabhu. So, of course, this is more or less like a summary of primary creation. The actual chronological description of primary creation is according to the what was mentioned in the 5th chapter. This is clarified by Srila Vishnu Deva Thakura in his commentary. So, what is mentioned here is like a summary. So, it's not chronological. So, he clarifies that when you want, if you want, if you are looking for chronology, accept the chronology that was mentioned in the 5th chapter. This is not a chronological description. It's just like a summary. It's just like, yes, Prabhu. So what all we have seen in 2nd canto? So you may remember, you may share based on your remembrance. It may not be chronological. So therefore, already Garbhavagasaya Vishnu's role is mentioned. Now Karanavagasaya Vishnu's role is indicated here. Ekaha devaha nanatva manvichan. The one Lord desired to become many. Who is this one Lord? Karanavagasaya Vishnu. So after Karanavagasaya Vishnu performs his role, then Garbhavagasaya Vishnu enters. But here now first Garbhavagasaya Vishnu is mentioned and now Karanavagasaya Vishnu's role is coming. So, ekaha devaha nanatvam anvichan yoga talpat samuttitah. He rose from his bed after the sleep of universal destruction. Third canto it is further described that the Lord desired to his maya potency comes and wakes him up. Please wake up from your sleep. It's time for creation. He said, oh really? Okay. Yoga talpat samuttitah. Then he wakes up from his yoga talpa. Talpa means bed. And then he glances at Pradhan. Okay. Vyasrajat viryam hiranmayam mayaya trida. And he created the universe shining brightly in three forms by his energy. The Lord created the three forms which are adidaivam, sense devata, adhyatmam, subtle sense organ, and adibhutam, gross sense form. These are the three layers, right? So the universe has three layers, individual living entities also have these three layers. So we created this universal form which is made of these three layers. Adhyatmam, Adibhutam and Adidaivam. So here it is mentioned that so the one entity merging the jivas in himself at the time of destruction was situated as one. This is the meaning of ekaha. How is it one? Because he merged all the other living entities within his body. But the living entities are not created by him now. They are going to be released by him. They were staying with him. In that sense, he is ekaha. So, it should be understood in such a way that it is not contradicting the basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita. After that, at the time of creation, he desired variety. Nanatvam anvichan. Okay. So, he woke up and after creating elements such as Mahatattva, he created by these elements the layers of universe shining brightly. How many layers? Three layers. What are those three? Adhyatmik, Adhibhautik and Adhidaivik layers. The creator of the Virat Roop, the creation of the Virat Roop took place by combining the Lord's energy with the parts of the elements such as Mahatattva. You remember the Bibrat Shakti, the cohesive energy bound all the elements together. That's what happens next after the creation of the elements. After Karana Srishti, Karya Srishti starts. Karya Srishti starts with Karana Sai Vishnu's Bibrat Shakti binding all those elements and it creates a Hiranmaya egg. And then Garbhodaka Sai, it floats in Karana ocean for 1000 years. Then Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu enters it, fills the bottom half with Garbhodaka water, lies down in it, and then creates the 14 planetary systems. Brahmaji appears and sits on top of Satyaloka, and then he starts performing his creation, that is Visarga. This is the sequence. This sequence is mentioned in the 5th chapter, but this sequence is not exactly mentioned here in this chapter, because the purpose is not to sequentially, chronologically describe, it's just a summary. Then Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu entered that Virat Roop, filled half with water and lied down and went to sleep. After he rose from the sleep, he manifested the totality of the universe in three forms. In the form of Adhidaiva, Adhyatma and Adhibhuta. Clear? So now two personalities are mentioned. So this is like a summary. So who manifested the universe in the form of Adhyatmik, Adhibhautik and Adhidaiva? It's not Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. It is Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. Okay. So that Hiranmaya Anda, when it is floating in Karanadaka ocean, that is not yet differentiated into these three layers. It is just a primordial soup. Pradhan is the primordial soup. You know this primordial soup, right? How many of you don't know? There is this, one of the creation theories is the primordial soup theory. So, where their proposition is that all the chemicals were lying in a big bowl like thing, primordial soup, and the glands and a lightning fell on that primordial soup. And that lightning initiated the whole creation process. All the chemicals combined together in various proportions and the whole universe created. Okay. So this also they stole from where? From our explanation. So the primordial soup is the pradhan and the lightning is the glands of Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. And then they added their own part of the story to it and created some masala there. So the universe, as after being bound by that cohesive energy, that which is floating in the Karanadaka ocean, is not yet differentiated into these three layers. Adhyatmik, Adhibhav. They are not literally three physical layers. Just like, it's not like in our body there is literally three physical layers. They are three functional layers. You understand? So there is the gross layer, there is the subtle body, and there is the sense devatas. Okay. So therefore this 13th verse talks about Karanadaka Sai Vishnu desiring to create and glancing from that. After that, when he is telling that he manifested this universe into three layers, that literal manifesting it into three layers is done by Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. But in between these two, this whole Lord glancing at Pradhan and initiating this whole thing, then Pradhan becomes Mahatattva, Mahatattva becomes Ahankar, from Ahankar comes mind, intelligence, senses, everything. Then all of that is bound by the cohesive energy of Karanadaka Sai Vishnu, and then that bound thing becomes a golden egg, floats in the Karanadaka ocean, and then Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu enters it, fills the bottom half with Garbhodaka ocean, lies down with it, then manifest the three universe which is differentiated into these three. All of that is condensed in this one verse. So it is not Kara, it's not that Purusha who desired to become many, who actually ended up manifesting the three layers. It is actually Garbhodara Sai Vishnu. That is the point. Ataikam Paurusham Viryam Trida Vidyata Tachrano. Then the one shining Purusha divided into three forms. Please hear about this. So how these three layers manifested, I am going to tell you. Please hear. So the three layers are nothing but, you know, as I told you, when the Virat Purusha desired to eat, first the gross tongue manifested. Which layer is this? Adibhuta. Then Varuna and Jihva manifested there. Adhyatma and Adideva. Varuna is Adideva. Jihva is Adhyatma. Then manifested taste, which is neither Adideva nor Adhyatma. Adibhuta. So Adibhuta is Tamasahankar. From Tamasahankar, elements are produced and Tanmatras are produced. So Tanmatra is Adibhuta. So sandwiched between two Adibhutas are the Adideva and Adhyatma. First, the grass tongue is Adibhuta, the Tanmatra is Adibhuta, in between the Varuna and Jihva are Adhyatma and Adideva. Is it clear? Is it not clear to someone? Yeah, gross sense is Adibhuta. Yeah, I will repeat your question, right? Yeah. Adideva and Adhyatma. Adideva is the sense devata, so Adhyatma is the subtle sense. And after that, Tanmatra is created.
Tanmatra. Okay, this is a question here. After Tanmatra, again he desires. Again,
yeah,
it's a symbolic. Again, the gross sense will manifest.
Another sense.
Another.
Is not a chronological description.
Achha.
It's not a chronological description.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very symbolic description.
Okay.
That desires give rise to gross and subtle body in living entities. Your gross and subtle body is desired by your desire.
Yes.
That's the theme that is described here. Otherwise, it's an imaginary Purusha. How can he desire? How can an imaginary Purusha desire? Like that. Antasharira akasha purushasya vicheshtatah ojasaho balam jagne tata prano mahanasuhu. Akashat, from the ether within the body of the universal form, who was acting in various ways, arose the shaktis of the senses, mind and body, and from them arose the best life air called Sutra. So first the whole thing started with the ether within the body, which means a space within the body. From that arose the Ojas, Sahas and Balam. Ojas is sensory strength, Sahas is mental strength, and Bala is physical strength. So all of that was created from the ether within the body of the universal form. And from all these three arose the Sutra Tattva, which is considered to be the prana of the living entity, or prana of the universal form. Okay. Then anupranam tiyam pranaah pranantam sarva jantushu apanantam apananti naradevam ivanugah. Just like in the human body or in the body of the living entities, prana controls everything. Similarly, in the universal form, sutra controls everything. When the prana leaves, the body is finished. Because prana lives along with the living entity. So, pranaha pranantam sarvajantushu, the senses become active, yam anupranamti, following the action of sutra. Apanantam apananti, and become inactive when the sutra becomes inactive. In our body also, when the prana shakti is very weak, we cannot function. Naradevam ivanugaha, just as the servants follow a king. Okay, like that. Prane nakshita takshutrat antarajayate viboho pitasato jakshatascha pranmukam muradidyata. Now this description starts. Pranena akshipata, being stimulated by this sutra tattva, kshut trid antara jayate viboho, hunger and thirst appeared within the universal form. Pipasataha jakshataha, when hunger and thirst appeared, he desired to drink and eat. Prak mukam nirabhidyata, first the place of the organ, mouth manifested.
Okay.
Okay. Then, mukatastala nirbinnam jihva tatropajayate tato nanara sochajnye jihvaya yodigamyate. After the appearance of the mouth, mukataha talu nirbinnam, what is talu? The gross tongue, adibhuta. Tatra jihva upajayate, and on that the subtle tongue manifested, jihva. What is not mentioned here is appearance of Varuna. Appearance of Varuna is not mentioned, but it should be understood. Okay. Tataha nana rasaha, from that various tastes which are experienced by the tongue were generated. So this is adibhuta, the sense tanmatra. Okay. First the gross tongue, then the sense devata and the subtle tongue, and then the tanmatra. Okay. Vivakshor mukato bhumno vakhnir vagvyakhritam tayoho jalevaitasya suchiram nirodas samajayata nasike nirabhidyetam dodo yati nabasvati tatravayur gandavaho grano nasij grikshatah. When the universal form desired to speak, bhumnaha vivakshoho, from his mouth, the devata of fire, from his mouth, mukatah, in the mouth, the devata of fire, the voice, sense organ, walk and speech, all three of them samajayata were produced. But before that, what would have been produced? The gross tongue. The gross tongue, it has been mentioned, already has been produced for the purpose of tasting. So therefore it is not mentioned here. So the tongue has two sense devatas because it has two functions. Agni for speech and Varuna for tasting. And because the mouth and gross tongue has already been created, it's not again repeated here. Then, jalevai tasya suchiram, when the form resided in water for a long time, obstruction appeared for the universal form. When the life air became active, two nostrils became differentiated. He wanted to breathe. So, nasika manifested. After that, what should manifest? Grana. Grana along with Ashwini Kumaras. They come. After that, smell is created. That's what is mentioned here. When the life air became active, the two nostrils became differentiated. When the universal form desired to smell, Vayu carries fragrance. The fragrance, the nose, everything appeared there. Of course, Vayu is not the sense devata of nose. It is Ashwini Kumaras only. It is not mentioned here, but one should understand that they were also created. But Vayu is needed for carrying fragrance. Gandavaha. He is called Gandavaha because he carries that fragrance. Yadatmani niralokam atmanam chadidrikshatah nirbinne yakshani tasya jyotish chakshush gunagraha. Yada Atmani Niralokam, when there was no vision in the universal form, Atmanam cha didrikshatah, and when he desired to see himself, Akshini, the two gross eyes manifested. And then Jyotihi, Jyotihi refers to the sun, he manifested, along with Chakshu, the subtle organ. And then the sense object of form manifested. Is it clear? So, gross organ, then the sense devata and subtle organ, then the sense object. This is the order in which it is created. But, for this creation, what is prerequisite? Desire of the universal form. Desire of the universal form means desire of the jivas in that particular universe. Creates the grasp the three layers, adhyatmik, adhibhuta and adhidevik layers. So what we understand is our desire creates the nature of our gross and subtle body with its three layers. Adhyatmik, adhidevik and adhibhautik layers are created by our own desires. That's what it means. Bodhyamanasya rishidir atmanastajjigrikshatah karnauchanira vidyetam dishashrotram gunagrahah. But the universal form desired to understand itself, understand himself. Tad rishibhi, which is revealed by the Vedic sound, karanau, two gross ears manifested. Dishaha, then the big devatas came to reside there along with shrotram, the subtle ear. Then the sense object of sound manifested there. Gunagraha nirabhidyetam. Vastuno mridu katinya lagguru lagu guru oshnashitatam jigrikshatastvan nirbinna tasyam roma mahiruhah tatrachantar bahirvatas tvacha labda guno vritah. When you desire to experience softness, hardness, lightness, heaviness, warmth and coolness of the grass, or coolness, the grass skin became manifested. So, tvacha or tvak manifested first. Then, tasyam roma mahiruhah, along his hairs and plants, who are the sense devatas of hairs, they became manifested. Then, vayu, the sense devata, he manifested along with tvacha, the subtle sense organ. Of course, in the two, one of them should be tvacha and the other should be charma. So, charma is the gross, tvacha is the subtle. Okay, that manifested. The sense of touch. Okay, let's continue. Hastaururuha tustasya nana karma chikirshaya tayostu balavanindra adanam ubayashrayam. When the universal form desired to perform various activities, nana karma chikirshaya, hastau, hasta are the gross hands. The two hands, tayostu balavan, the strength of the two hands is the ability to lift is the subtle organ. Indra is sense devata. They were created after that. And what is the sense object? Adanam. Receiving things. So that manifested. Like that. Gatim jigisha tappadav ruruhate abhikamikam padhyam yajnaswayam havyam karma bikriyate nrabihi. When the universal form desired movement, gatim jigishataha, which is dear to him, 2 feet appeared, pada is gross legs, then yagya is the sense devata, and the subtle feet, havyam karma bhi kriyate nrabihi, the subtle feet appeared, and by this, he can perform his purpose of go about to collect objects for sacrifice. So the legs were created for the purpose of moving about to collect objects needed for sacrifice. Niradidyata shishno vai praja. So in our this thing, the purpose of legs is to collect, to move about to collect mridanga and kartal so that we can perform our sacrifice. Harinam Sankirtan. Niradidyata shishno vai prajanandam vitartinaha upasta asit kamanam priyam tat ubayashrayam. When the universal form desired offspring, sexual pleasure and enjoyment of swarga. The penis appeared. Okay, that is the shishna. Then, upastha, the subtle sense organ, and the devata of sex organ, that is prajapati, both of them manifested. And what is the sense object? The pleasure of enjoyment with the woman is the sense object that was created.
Utsisrikshordatumalam niravidyata vaigudam tatappayustato mitra utsarga ubayashrayah.
When the universal form desired to expel waste products, the gross anus appeared, then the subtle anus and its devata mitra, they appeared, and then the sense object of expulsion, excretion, that manifested.
Asisripso purappurya nabidvaram apanatah tatrapanastato mrityu pritaktam mubayashrayam.
When the universal form desired to go from one body to another body, transmigrate, what manifested? Nabidvara, the opening of the navel. That's why if you see, when the child is born, how is the child connected to his mother? Through the umbilical cord, which connects the mother and the child. So the umbilical cord is connected to the nabi. So the umbilical, that nabi dwara is said to be the gross organ for transmigration. That's how it is described. In universal form desired to go from his body to another body by the path of apana and prana, the location of the opening of the navel, then the subtle organ is apana. The devata is mrityu and the sense object is death. All of that manifested in the sense organ, in the universal form.
Aditsoranapana nam asan kukshantra nadayah nadya samudras chatayos tushtit tushtistadashraye.
When the universal form desired to take in food and drink,
Aditsoho annapananam,
kukshi, the location of the abdomen, kukshi, and the sense organs are antara and nadayah. So these are subtle organs. For lack of an equivalent word, Prabhupada has written as intestines and veins. But intestines and veins are gross organs only in our understanding. But nadi is not literally veins, and antra is not literally intestines, because these are gross. But what it's mentioned here is the subtle. So forget about calling it by any English name. Antra and nadi are the subtle organs which are involved in digesting solid food and liquid food. Nadi is that subtle organ which is involved in digesting liquid food or absorbing liquid food, and antara is that subtle organ which is involved in digesting solid food. Okay. You may call it intestines or veins, but they are not intestines or veins. For lack of a better word, the word intestines and veins are used, but they are not gross. These are gross, but antara and nadi are subtle. It's clearly mentioned. Okay. And the devatas are rivers and oceans. So Prabhupada writes that therefore if someone has any digestive problem, one should go and take an ocean bath. And if someone has any nervous problem, then one should go and take a river bath. Because the sense devatas of the veins and intestines are samudra, sorry, rivers and ocean. The sense devata for nadi is nadi. The sense devata for antra is samudra. And what is the sense object? Tushti, pushti. Tushti means pacification of hunger, and pushti means after one drinks some, if one is thirsty and after he drinks some water, then he feels satisfied, that is called pushti. Of course, these two words are used in different, with different meanings in different contexts. When the 11th canto Bhagavatam verse talks about Bhakti Pareshana Bhava Viraktir Tushti Pushti Shudapayana Gasam, there the meaning of Tushti and Pushti varies slightly. It's not the same. Like that.
Nididhyasorat Mamayam Hridayam Niradidhyata Tato Manas Chandra Yiti Sankalpakama Yevacha.
When the universal form desired to contemplate material objects and illusions concerning himself, the heart appeared. Then the sense organ called the mind, the devata Chandra, and the sense objects Sankalpa and Kama appeared. So Sankalpa is determination and Kama is desire. They manifested after the heart manifested. As I mentioned the other day, the heart is the gross organ which houses four antakaranas, the mind, buddhi, ahankar and chitta. Okay, so heart has been created. The first antakarana that is mentioned is mind. Subsequently, others will also be mentioned.
We hear that mind is throat, not only heart is a region for soul, but mind, we generally say where mind is located, subtle body, throat.
See, soul is also located in the heart,
yeah,
but its influence is spread throughout the body. Isn't it? So that's how we are conscious of what is happening in our toes also, what is happening in our head also, head to toe. Similarly, the mind may be present in the heart, but its influence may be present throughout. Like that.
Tvak charma mamsa rudira medo majjasti dhatavah bhumyaktejo maya sapta prano vyomambu vayubihi.
The seven dhatus known as tvak charma mamsa rudira medo majja and asti. Skin, its upper layer, muscle, blood, fat, marrow and bone. Which means the gross part of our body is made of bhumi up tejomaya, are composed predominantly of earth, water and fire. Whereas the life airs are nourished by air, ether and water. So Prabhupada takes this as the gross body and subtle body. The gross body is nourished by earth, water and fire, and the subtle body is nourished by air, ether and water. So Prabhupada gives an interesting purport here. I will read. We see that water is the common element in both the gross and subtle forms of the material creation. Water is common. Earth, water, fire, ether, air and water. So water is common in both the gross and subtle manifestations. Therefore, it is the principal element of all five elements. as prana is nourished by sky, water and air, Prabhupada writes, therefore fresh air, regular bath and ample space increases vitality. Subtle body. If mentally if we want to be healthy, we need fresh air, regular bath and ample space. Some place like GV. Fresh air is there. As long, you know, as many times as you want, you can take bath. And there is ample space also is there. Few people are sitting such a big classroom. And similarly, for maintenance of the gross body, you know, gross body is dependent on earth, water and fire. So Prabhupada says, earth refers to fresh produce, that is also available. And fresh produce from earth, fresh water and heat. Heat means digestive heat. When the Jatragni is functioning properly, and if you have fresh produce and fresh water, that's good for the upkeep of the gross body. And if there is ample space, sometimes when we are feeling very, when our mind is not functioning properly, when you go and take a nice refreshing bath, then suddenly, you know, you feel quite good and you can function properly. Have you noticed sometimes? So like that. So like that's how Prabhupada is mentioning. So these three things, that is fresh produce from earth, fresh water and heat, is good for the upkeep of the gross body. And for the upkeep of the subtle body, ample space, regular bath and fresh air, these three are needed. Then he says,
Gunatmakanindriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Gunaha Manasarvavikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini.
He is speaking about the nature of each of these elements. He says, what is the nature of senses? Indriyani Gunatmakani. The nature of the senses is to gravitate towards the sense objects. That is the natural nature of sense objects. So the sense objects control the senses. But we have heard opposite. Isn't it? Indriyani paranyahur indriyabhya param manaha manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastu saha. That's what we have heard. But here he says, gunatmakani indriyani. The senses gravitate to sense objects. That is the nature of senses. Bhutadi prabhava gunaha. The sense objects appear attractive because of false ego. Isn't it? That is why Prabhupada was also recently mentioning in his class. Stool is attractive to pig, but it's not so attractive to human beings. Whereas nice chapati, sabji chapati is attractive to human beings, it may not be so attractive to pigs. So particular sense objects are attractive based on false ego. Because that living entity is identifying with the hog's body, therefore stool is attractive. Then the same living entity after transmigration identifies with the human body, different sense objects are attractive. So sense objects are attractive due to false ego. Manas sarva vikaratma, and mind sustains all changes. Because it is the reservoir of all impressions. Buddhir vijnana rupini, the intelligence consists of the power of discrimination. Okay, so we will end with this verse, but before that I just want to speak little bit on this nature of hierarchy. I might have spoken about it before, I don't recollect. That here it says that the sense objects control the senses. So the scriptures talk about two kinds of hierarchy. One is for the perfected souls, and another is for the materialistic people. For the perfected souls, indriyani paranyahur indriyabhya param manah manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastu saha. That hierarchy of the soul controlling the intelligence, intelligence controlling the mind, mind controlling the senses, senses controlling the sense objects, that hierarchy is true for elevated personalities, pure devotees, you can say. But for materialists, the opposite hierarchy only functions. Where Bhagavad Gita also says, what is that? Vayur Navam Ivambasi, what is that verse? Now, even one sense, what is that? Indriyanam Icharatam Yanmano Anavidiyate Tadasya Harati Pragyam Vayur Navam Ivambasi. This verse exactly talks about the opposite hierarchy. If you see, Indriyanam hi charatam. The Indriyas are wandering. After what? After the sense objects. Indriyanam hi charatam. Even one of the Indriyas which is wandering after the sense object, because of being controlled by the sense object, what happens? Indriyanam hi charatam yan mano anividiyate. On which the mind is concentrating. So the mind is pulled by the sense. Tadasya harati pragyam. And that mind then pulls the intelligence. Vayur navam ivambasi. Just like a wind, takes away an unanchored boat. So this verse talks about the exact opposite hierarchy. Sense objects are controlling the senses. Sense is controlling the mind. Mind is controlling the intelligence. Whereas the very next chapter, the very same chapter later, right? Indriyana, Indriyani Paranyahur, Indriyabhya Parama, second chapter only, right? Third chapter, it says, and in the last section, right? The last section of third chapter, it says, it gives an opposite hierarchy. Okay? So, ideally, the intelligence should control the mind, mind should control the senses, senses should control the sense objects. And this is for pure devotees and perfected jnanis, ashtangyogis like that. And for absolute materialists, the opposite only works. The sense objects control the senses, senses control the mind, mind controls the intelligence, and intelligence pulls the soul to hell. This is what is that, that verse, Guna? Fourth canto, Stambastoyam. That verse comes, right? So anyway, so these two, for perfected beings and for pure devotees, so for perfected beings and materialists, these two hierarchies are static hierarchies. It doesn't change. For perfected beings, always the intelligence controls the mind. Mind controls the senses, senses control the sense objects. And for materialists, always the sense objects control the senses, senses control the mind, mind controls the intelligence. But for sadhakas, it's a dynamic hierarchy. It's not static. Sometimes when we are in good association, the higher hierarchy takes over. When we may not be attentive and we may not be in good association, the lower hierarchy may kick in any time. Suddenly the sense objects will start controlling the senses, senses will start controlling the mind, mind will take away the intelligence and so on. And then we realize it and we run to proper association and then the proper hierarchy will be restored. We will be guided by the intelligence, intelligence will guide the mind. Anukulyasya sankalpo, pratikulyasya varjanam. The mind will say, okay. So then the mind will say, those senses, this sense object is good, this sense object is bad. So for sadhakas, it is a dynamic hierarchy. But for materialists and perfected pure devotees, it's a static hierarchy. So the more one progresses towards perfection, the more the higher hierarchy predominates. And the more one is in towards the neophyte stage, the lower hierarchy predominates. That's why there is no contradiction when sometimes the Shastras say that Indriyani Paranyahur, Indriyade Paramanah and so on. And the same chapter, one chapter before says that the sense objects, the senses go behind sense objects and the it fills the mind and mind fills the intelligence. So one might be wondering which is controlling what? Isn't the mind supposed to control the senses? The intelligence supposed to control the mind? Like that. So, any questions, comments before we complete today's discussion? Harshad Prabhu.
We have discussed that intelligence, mind and prana, they all are different, like come from different sources. Sometimes you also hear that they are one and the same thing, just act in different functions. Sometimes they act as the mind, sometimes as the
Either way you understand, functionally they are different. That's how Bhagavatam explains in that canto. They are functionally different. Literally, physically, are they different? I don't know. Maybe not. We don't know. But functionally, we know. When when the function of sankalpa and vikalpa is happening, we know mind is acting. When the function of samshaya, viparyasa, nischaya, swapa, smriti, when these are happening, we know buddhi is acting. When awareness of the sense object is there, we know chitta is acting. When there is identification with the self, we know ahankara is acting. So we may say that, oh, these are the same entity but performing four different functions, could be, but it is not mentioned like that in Bhagavatam. Because it says that the Mahatattva is the, it becomes the Chitta, and Buddhi is a product of Rajasahankar, and Mana is a product of Sattvika Hankar and so on. So, maybe in the sense in which that is mentioned is because all four are housed in the heart only. So, in that sense probably there is a understanding that all four are same. Because they are housed in the same gross organ. But Bhagavatam third canto clearly mentions that the gross portion of the heart is divided into four different sections in which these four different antakaranas are housed. That's how it is described. Kapilavar describes like that. We will see it when we come to the third canto, 26th chapter. So therefore, in that sense, I think they are different. Okay. So, we'll end today's discussion here and tomorrow morning we'll convene back and complete the rest of the 10th chapter and the canto overview. Okay. Can it wait till tomorrow or? Okay. So, tomorrow we'll continue. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.